Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Debbie Johnson is Oregon's newest millionaire. The lifelong Canby resident and newly retired, Baker was announced Wednesday morning as the fourth of five grand prize winners of Kroger's Community Immunity Giveaway. "I'm definitely retired now," Johnson said with a laugh. "You won't see me going back to work." Seriously, the money will be life-changing for Johnson and her husband, Rusty. They have no grand or concrete plans at the moment, but they will pay off some bills and are looking at buying an RV to do some traveling. Kroger is the U.S.'s largest supermarket retailer, operating more than 2,500 stores across the country, so it was by no means a guarantee that a winner would show up in Canby, Oregon, or even a Fred Meyer, which is just one of 20 or so chains this grocery giant operates. "This is the first $1 million I've ever given away," Fred Meyer president Dennis Gibson joked afterward. "I hope to do it again someday." To be eligible, individuals must have had at least one of the COVID-19 vaccine at a Kroger Family Company location or by a Kroger healthcare professional at an off-site event before July 10th. Previous winners included a Kroger associate in Jackson, Mississippi, and a married couple from Franklin Township, Indiana. Johnson said she, Rusty, and her parents actually got their shots back in March, months before the Community Immunity campaign was announced. "It wasn't until later that I saw that and I thought, well, I guess I'm eligible for that," she recalled. "You know, I had no idea that out of millions of people, I would be one of the winners. It was a real shock. I'm still in shock." Johnson has been a customer of Fred Meyer and Canby for more than 20 years, calling it her favorite store. One can imagine that Wednesday's announcement didn't do much to alter those rankings. "I've shopped here for a long time," she said. "This is my main store." Though getting the free COVID-19 shot certainly turned out to be a good move for Johnson and her family in more ways than one, she said she believes it should be up to each person to make the decision that is best for them. "It's their own choice," she said. "It was my choice to get my vaccine. I wanted to protect myself. But I have some friends that haven't gotten theirs yet, and I respect that. It's to each their own." Here we go again? Amid a worrying surge of new COVID-19 infections and hospitalizations, which public health experts say has been driven by the more contagious Delta variant and vaccine resistance, the Oregon Health Authority recommends a return to universal mask wearing in public indoor settings. The announcement Tuesday followed a similar about-face from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, calling on even fully vaccinated individuals to mask up indoors in areas with high case rates, which would include Clackamas and 24 other counties in Oregon. The OHA on Tuesday reported 1,032 new confirmed and presumptive cases of COVID-19, its highest one-day total since January. Meanwhile, state officials reported 259 people with COVID-19 are actively hospitalized, a more than 25% increase from Monday, and the biggest jump daily since the start of the pandemic. Today's reported sharp rise in cases and hospitalizations in Oregon are sobering reminders that the pandemic is not over, especially for Oregonians who remain unvaccinated, said Dr. Dean Seidlinger, state epidemiologist and state health officer. Seidlinger said the highly contagious Delta variant has increased tenfold in Oregon over the past 2 weeks and is associated with an estimated 80% of the new cases in Oregon. The CDC has constantly confirmed that the vaccines currently being used in the United States are effective against all known variants of the coronavirus, including Delta. State officials have said more than 90% of the Oregon's COVID-19 hospitalizations and deaths have been unvaccinated individuals. The use of face masks provides significant protection for individuals who are unvaccinated, as well as an additional level of protection from a small but known risk of infection by the virus for persons who have already been vaccinated, Seidlinger said. OHA's recommendations aligns with the CDC's new guidance that everyone, including fully vaccinated persons, wear a mask in public indoor settings. OHA's recommendation applies statewide and not just areas with higher infection and higher transmission. Whether the spike will lead Governor Kate Brown to reverse course on the statewide mask mandate and other business restrictions she lifted less than a month ago remains to be seen. Brown told reporters Wednesday she would be discussing the matter with public health experts and making a decision later today or later this week. For more information about the vaccine and where you can find it, visit covidvaccine.oregon.gov. If you have questions about taking the vaccine, consult your healthcare provider. The body of a Gladstone man who had been missing since February was found in the Clackamas River at Clackamas Park in Oregon City Friday. Clackamas County deputies said the snorkeler reported seeing the body downstream from the McLaughlin Bridge. The Clackamas County Sheriff's Office dive team responded to the scene along with Oregon City Police, Gladstone Police, Clackamas Fire District, and Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue. The body was located, submerged in about 12 feet of water. Police described the remains as in state of extreme decomposition, with investigators unable to immediately determine the person's identity or cause of death. The body was identified Monday as belonging to Christopher Kevin Cope, 43, a man who had reportedly not been seen since leaving his house on February 15, 2021, after experiencing a behavioral health incident. Gladstone police said Cope had a history of traumatic brain injury and had been contacted by law enforcement earlier that day. Cope left his house in February without his cell phone, wallet, or cash. Police said they believed Cope may have been living on the streets in the Portland area. An autopsy will be performed at the Oregon State Police Crime Lab to determine cause of death. Governor Kate Brown on Tuesday signed into law a sweeping set of clean energy initiatives, giving Oregon the most aggressive timeline in the country for transitioning to 100% clean electricity sources. Comprised of four bills, HB 2021, HB 2165, HB 2475, and HB 3141, the package requires retail utilities to offer electricity from 100% clean energy sources by 2040 and mandates that providers offer greater support for electric vehicles. Brown signed the package during a press event at Daimler Truck North America and Portland General Electric's Electric Island Commercial Vehicle Charging Center in Portland Tuesday morning, saying the bills will address the climate crisis head-on, while also promoting economic growth. With these policies, we will create jobs in the 21st century clean energy economy, said Brown. we will reduce carbon emissions, and we will make sure the economic, environmental, and health benefits of our clean energy economy reaches all Oregonians, especially those who have been disproportionately impacted by climate change and pollution. Oregon is leading the way. Brown said the bills will reduce emissions, expand clean energy access, enhance energy efficiency programs, and create good-paying clean technology jobs in Oregon, helping ensure the state achieves its greenhouse gas reduction goals while protecting consumers, particularly those in the most vulnerable communities. I have continued to make climate action an urgent priority as Oregon continues to grapple with repeated climate disasters, the impacts of which are felt disproportionately by Black, Indigenous, Latino, Latina, Latinx, Asian, Pacific Islander, tribal, communities of color, low-income, and rural communities, Brown said. I'm so proud that we have taken steps forward to address climate change and build a more sustainable Oregon, all the while growing our economy and creating green jobs. I want to thank the legislative leaders, advocacy groups and community groups, utilities, renewable energy developers, and other businesses who worked tirelessly to see these bills become law. '91 School will host a meet and greet event Thursday to introduce new principal, Joanna Tobin. Tobin is replacing Skylar Rudolph, who announced last month he was stepping down due to health considerations. The event will be at 5 p.m. Thursday in the 91 School cafeteria. Students are welcome to attend. Before Tobin's hiring, the Canby School District held a series of community surveys, which Superintendent Aaron Downs said revealed several key themes. A leader who understands the unique family that is the 91 school community, someone who puts students first, and a principal who is qualified to lead a rural K-9 school. In Tobin, Downs and the district believe they found the perfect leader for the unique Hubbard area school. Ms. Tobin possesses the knowledge, skills, and abilities to successfully lead in your community, Downs said. She is a student-centered leader focused on equitable outcomes for all students who has significant experience as a K-9 principal and an instructional leader. Tobin began her career in the North Clackamas School District, serving as a teacher, counselor, and assistant principal. While in the St. Helens School District, she was an assistant high school principal focused on curriculum and instruction, a middle school and elementary school principal, and served as a director of the English Learners Program. Most recently, Tobin worked in the Riverdale School District, serving as a K-8 principal for 7 years. In her time there, she was also the director of curriculum and interim superintendent at the request of the school board. It's an honor to join the Canby School District and the 91 school community, Tobin said. I look forward to the teamwork ahead in this thriving educational community and to achieving even stronger academic outcomes for students. Tobin earned her master's degree in education and school counseling from Lewis and Clark College. She also completed her administrative licensure program there. She attended Linfield College for her undergraduate studies. She lives in Sherwood with her family.
Hey James, what's going on with the internet? The Wi-Fi is all spotty.
Well, is it your internet or the Wi-Fi?
What are you talking about? Aren't they the same thing?
Well, kind of, but no. You see, your home or office accesses the internet through underground fiber cables from DirectLink. It's actually your Wi-Fi router that converts that internet connection into an over-the-air signal for all your wireless devices.
Okay, you lost me at kind of?
Why don't we even try? Look, you have seen like a box-looking device around the studio here. It's probably hidden under, it's under a thick layer of dust.
No, I don't. Oh, wait, is it that blinky flashy thing behind the stack of old pizza boxes?
Yeah, yes, it's the blinky flashy thing. That's the Wi-Fi equipment that connects your iPad, your PlayStation, and the laptop to the internet. it.
I bought that off Craigslist like 8 years ago.
Frankie, I think we just found your problem. Your Wi-Fi equipment is ancient. Electronics, they get old fast. And even when new software updates or faster broadband comes out, your old router just can't keep up. It's like expecting a Model T to outpace those new F-150 Lightnings.
Great. So now I have to make Tyler go buy, I have to go buy a whole new Wi-Fi setup. How does he, I even know what to get?
Look, I'm going to make it simple. Just call DirectLink, man. Their professional grade Wi-Fi equipment is super affordable, and they'll manage the updates and the network security for you. They'll even help you install your new router in the perfect spot to get the strongest possible signal. You can visit directlink.coop/Wi-Fi to get started.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to make Tyler call DirectLink today. All right, joining us on the Canby Conversation today is Canby Fire Chief Jim Davis. Hey, Chief.
Hey, Tyler. Hey. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm nervous about having you on. It seems like every time you're on the podcast, some disaster happens like right after, whether it's ice storms or the heat dome that we had before. We have some heat coming up in the forecast this weekend.
We do.
Yeah.
We do. Right now, Canby's forecasted to be as hot as 102 degrees, okay. I believe, on Friday.
Yeah, everybody and listening to this just groaned.
Right,
if they hadn't already
right,
seen it.
And it's also going to gradually reduce, but 96 to 98 yeah. on Saturday.
Sure.
But still hot,
yeah.
just like we've been experiencing.
Yeah, yeah. So, obviously, in terms of health and safety, that's a big thing that you guys do here at Canby Fire. Both obviously when there is an issue, but try to be as proactive as possible. Do you have tips for folks for how they can keep themselves and their loved ones safe amid the higher temperatures?
Absolutely. At last time when it was 116 degrees out, obviously there were some people that waited too long to call for help, and some went into cardiac arrest and did not survive. Mm-hmm. Others, we received requests to do welfare checks, and when we got there, we found the person had died. Mm-hmm. We don't know if that person was attributed to that last heat wave.
Yeah,
we feel terrible about that. Yeah. Every time we have to go out on one of those calls, we feel bad for the people. In that, many times the people were telling me, actually, that they didn't want to bother the firefighters,
yeah.
and they didn't want to. They didn't feel it was worth calling 911. And we want to dispel that as best we can,
yeah.
and with the yet not overloading the 911 system
yeah.
With calls. So we do have a plan moving forward for this heat wave. We have worked together with Clackamas County Emergency Management, the City of Canby, and so that we're delivering the same message. But the most part is to know that if you do not have a way to cool down during the daytime, and that's the worst part of the time is in the afternoon,
yeah.
is to go to one of the advertised cooling centers here in Canby.
Right.
The other part is preparing yourself. In other words, making sure that you have a fan, contact your family or loved ones, see if they can bring you over a fan or an air conditioner or move to a family's location.
Yeah, temporarily.
Temporarily, where you can seek some cooler temperatures.
Yeah.
The other part is knowing that you can go to a cooling center.
Mm-hmm.
We have 4 cooling centers set up.
Okay.
We are going to be using the Canby Adult Center, which is located at Ivy and 13th,
yeah.
1250 South Ivy.
Uh-huh.
And that's going to be from 8:30 to 4:30 every day, not on Saturday and Sunday.
Okay.
The Canby Public Library.
Is that started now?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yep. The Canby Public Library is mm-hmm. going to be open at City Hall for people, and that's going to be 8 to 4 p.m.
Okay.
And then the Zora Lutheran Church right now is going to open up their doors for Friday and part of Saturday.
Okay.
And they are located at 190 Southwest 3rd Avenue. And they do a wonderful job there. And then we also urge you to call the Zora Lutheran Church after Saturday to find out the availability of a cooling center.
Yeah.
At 503-266-4061. And then 24 hours a day, people can go down to the Denny's restaurant. We did confirm with them today. People are welcome to come into the Denny's restaurant to cool off 24 hours a day.
Yeah, that's awesome. I know Zoar and Denny's, I think Canby Adult Center and Canby Library, when the heat wave happened before, was still a little bit before there had been the full reopening and everything. But Zoar and Denny's were doing cooling centers during the heat dome that we had, and I thought that was really cool. I know Denny's, it was no purchase necessary or whatnot, no pressure or whatnot. They were just trying to help the community, and I thought that was really cool. But it is nice to have the options. If you are feeling a little hungry, maybe Denny's is where you want to head, or maybe if you want to read a couple books while you're there, head over to the library and also get cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That would work out perfect.
Yeah.
But as far as preparing yourself, drink plenty of water, obviously, avoid the direct sunlight. Recognize sign of heat.
Yes.
Okay. And so this is where you know yourself better than anyone else.
Right.
If you're not feeling right, then that's a good indicator, and that's a medical emergency, and that's when you call 911.
Right. There's heat exhaustion, right?
And heat stroke.
Heat stroke, which is the worst stage.
Correct.
Yeah.
And we do not want you to get to heat stroke.
Yeah.
Okay. Most of it is brought about by dehydration, not drinking enough water.
Right.
Okay, and so you need to drink plenty of water to stay hydrated.
Heat exhaustion is basically, you would think, like, just all the symptoms, whatever you associate with being hot, it's just that to the extreme. You might feel really tired, you might be sweating a lot and whatnot, and then heat stroke should be pretty obviously concerning, because it's when those things stop, right? Like, you would stop sweating a lot of times. Like,
you're exactly right.
Yeah.
For those symptoms, for heat exhaustion and heat stroke, of course, you're going to be looking at a headache, feeling more confused, rapid heart rate, strong pulse, which, if those are unusual, those are good indicators. A good one is nausea. If you're feeling sick to your stomach, that's a good indicator. And if you take your temperature, it's over 103 degrees, you're definitely headed towards heat stroke.
Yeah.
Do not wait that long. You know, you want to notify us if you have heat exhaustion.
Right.
And we will come. Now, how do you access the system? Okay, at any time, you can call 211, okay, and 211 will connect you to Canby. And under Canby, we'll also provide you the addresses and locations of the cooling stations. If you do not have a ride during the weekday, you can call Canby Area Transit, and all they need is your name and address during business hours, and they will schedule a pickup for you.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in the county area, then, of course, going through 211 and through Clackamas County Emergency Management, they will list the resources there to help you get a ride to the cooling stations.
Yeah.
And if at all else fails, call the fire department business line, because if you get frustrated, cannot find that ride, please call the fire department and we will assist you.
And like you said, just going back to the symptoms real quick, is you said it really well. It's just like, you know yourself, you know your body, and look for those things that are unusual. You know, like you say, fatigue. I've got three kids. I always feel fatigued. You know, that's nothing new. So look for those things that that are, you don't typically feel. That's got to be heartbreaking, Chief, when you hear people saying, you know, when you know, you know, you have the tragic result and you see that they waited too long, and you hear, you know, oh, we just didn't want to inconvenience, or we were, you know, they were trying to do the right thing, right? And they were just misguided in that.
Well, and they did wait too long.
Yeah.
They got into the heat stroke and eventually cardiac arrest.
Yeah. And just for folks feeling that way, I mean, if nothing else, ironically, when you wait too long, that becomes a much harder call and it takes much more resources for the firefighter. So if that is something you're thinking about, which is really, you know, good-hearted of you to think about that, but it is better to let the firefighters, you know, jump on that call earlier when it's not as serious.
Let us come out and make a determination, yeah. Help you make your decision.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, so fortunately, it is not looking like it's going to be 116 again. It has been a little while since that happened. We haven't really had a chance to talk. I'd love to hear just what that was like from kind of firsthand from you as a fire chief. What was your experience of that event and running the fire district here?
Well, the firefighters worked hard, obviously. We did have a structure fire when it was 116 degrees.
Yeah, Canby Regency.
Yes.
Yeah.
And firefighters are good for basically about 10 to 15 minutes of work, and then there's no place for them to cool down. Where normally they come out of a fire, they can cool down. In this case, there's no place to cool down.
I didn't even think about that.
So yeah. It takes them out of service until they can hydrate and be ready to go back to work in about 15 to 20 minutes,
yeah.
in best case.
That's dangerous and concerning for them. Yeah,
very dangerous.
Yeah.
And so it requires us to call more resources to the scene.
Yeah.
When we have higher temperatures like that for firefighters, because of just the fact they're only good for so long,
yeah.
before the human body gives up.
Yeah.
The recent brush fire on Highway 99, for instance,
yeah.
We had 39 pieces of equipment, just mainly because of firefighter exhaustion and working in those temperatures. And that's equivalent to a 7-alarm fire.
Wow.
Yeah. 39 pieces of equipment, over 100 firefighters,
yeah.
At the scene.
Yeah. You know, and you had other agencies there. You had CCSO evacuating people or helping to evacuate.
Absolutely.
It was a busy scene.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It was, but it went very, very well. I'm very proud of the firefighters, the dispatch center,
mm-hmm.
emergency management, getting the $3 million worth of horses moved down to the fairgrounds.
Amazing. Yeah.
All within just a matter of an hour and a half
yeah.
or so of getting, and then the reverse 911. In getting the reverse 911 activated, and it worked very effectively.
Is there anything beyond what we've talked about as far as, you know, be aware, hydrate, and stay cool as best you can? Make a plan if you don't have air conditioning, if you don't have a fan, you know, either find those things or maybe a place where you can go and get cool. For folks that do sort of have that mindset that they want to help the fire department, is there anything else that we haven't talked about that folks can do to kind of help make things easier on the fire district if they want to support, or just any other tips for staying safe around the heat that's coming up?
Well, you know, the summer is still early.
Yeah.
We're not even to August 1st yet, very soon.
Yeah.
And we're anticipating more hot weather.
Yep.
And we could get back into those temperatures again.
Yeah.
And if that occurs, the fire danger is going to go into an extreme. We're in high now.
Yeah.
As far as preparation goes, I think there was a lack of planning on a lot of people's parts.
Yeah.
In regards to what does 116 with a good strong wind actually mean.
Yeah.
You know, and now we know. So now's the time to plan. Now's
yeah.
the time to prepare yourself.
Yeah.
And to know what your plan is going to be. Contact family members. If you call that 211 number, there's a social service number on there from the
yeah.
county. That can assist people that are in need of assistance.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so now's the time to plan, because whether it's this weekend or it's the middle of August,
yeah.
you know, the summer is very, you know, halfway through or early.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you don't use it this weekend, you will use it later on.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I think it was just a lack of experience on a lot of people's parts, not used to experiencing that kind of heat, right? Like, I heard from a lot of people that, you know, going into it was like, oh, you know, I'm not too worried, I'll just stay inside. But it turns out your little AC unit's not used to 100, and your home is 95 degrees, you know, for three straight days.
Well, and a fan at that point is just blowing around hot air.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you are obviously very busy. We don't have time to get into a whole, as you said, like a whole nother thing, which would be wildfire preparation and whatnot. But you actually have a couple events coming up for the community where folks can learn more about that and get some good tips for how we can hopefully be safe through the rest of our wildfire season here.
Absolutely. Thanks, Tyler. After the last fire season, what we all experienced was something that firefighters haven't experienced in their
Speaking
career.
Speaking of lack of preparation right now.
Okay. Right. And so people did, and I feel bad, that people not understanding what does level one, level two, yeah. level three evacuation, what should I do to prepare, what yeah. can I do to prepare, those type of things. But number one, we want to go back and revisit the fire season last year and what happened, why we made decisions that we did. And then secondarily, we want to get into what the definitions are for those evacuations. So yeah. we don't have mass panic, you know, when people started hearing of what does level one mean? Okay, well, that must mean I need to leave,
right.
you know, type. So we want to explain that. And of course, what it is you should prepare.
Yeah.
But one thing during this season that I can leave as a go away on our interview today is, you know, access our website. We've got good information there as far as go kits go.
Yeah.
Get into the reverse 911 app
yes.
Through Clackamas County and get that on your phone for
yeah.
notifications.
Yeah.
So that you have that, or on your home phone,
yeah.
so that you get notified when there's a large event occurring. Don't panic, be prepared. And last year, we also had a big problem with people overcrowding fuel stations and causing fuel stations to run out.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, think about keeping your gas tank full
yeah.
or three quarters full in
yeah.
the event that you did have to evacuate.
Yeah.
Now, the citizens of Canby, I can guarantee them that you're in a pretty good position in regards to wildland interurban phase fires.
Okay.
It will, because remember, we have water right now
yeah.
anyway,
yeah.
and the hydrants.
Yeah.
And we will, because our water district does a wonderful job.
Yeah.
Okay, and so if we have water to fight fire, we can create some fairly good defensible space.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest issues will be on those interface areas just outside the city or
yeah.
in the rural areas where a fire, like on Highway 99, was spreading very quickly towards South End Road.
Yeah.
You know, and everything worked. The reverse
yeah.
911 worked. People were told to leave immediately. And hopefully they know and can have a go bag as far as what it is they need to take with them right away.
Yeah.
Those are things that we want to do in a town hall meeting. So we'll be holding one out in the rural area. We're identifying that. We will notify you when we have that location, and
okay.
we'll hold one down at City Hall.
Okay, great.
Where we can explain what does that all mean. Because I get asked every day
yeah.
today about
yeah.
questions from last year
sure.
because it's something
Still
that
fresh in people's
it's
minds.
Fresh in people's minds and people are panicked with it as dry as it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Chief, thank you so much. We'll definitely help you get the word out about those when you have those set, and really appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Tyler.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. the first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life. Mm-hmm.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
All right, friends, this episode comes towards a close with this episode of Can Be Then, which is brought to you by The Book Nook, Canby's amazing local bookstore and gift shop. It is your source for new and used books, comic books, audiobooks, vintage books, children's books. Hey, you get the idea. It's all things books across from the backstop in downtown Canby, which is now reopened for in-store browsing. It was May of 1893. The Canby City Council was meeting for the first time in a cramped, cluttered room above the store owned by city pioneer William Knight. More on him in a moment. The council paid a handsome sum of $1.25 per month for the privilege. And that was part of the problem. See, running a city, it's expensive, and their coffers were completely empty. Their bills at that meeting totaled $35.50, which is called a cheap date today, but back then must have almost seemed insurmountable. The mayor and recorder were directed to procure $100 to pay the debt and cover the first year's expenses. Well, why become a city at all? I wonder how often Canby's first elected officials asked themselves that question. See, a scant 200 souls called the newly incorporated Canby home, and only 63 of them had voted in the town's first election, held a few days earlier. But 15 other cities, including neighboring Aurora, had been incorporated during the legislative session of 1893, and Canby joined the trend. Small or not, Canby was experiencing some issues that incorporation allowed the city to address. Canby already had 3 hotels: the Carlton and Rosencrantz department store, which would remain the city's largest for over 60 years, and several taverns, which drew rowdy loggers from outlying camps. The regulation of spirituous liquors, the best kind of liquors if you ask me, was a top agenda item in the council's first few meetings. Also, even in 1893, sprawl was already becoming a problem, but not the kind of sprawl you're thinking of. This is more the type of sprawl where your less clean and considerate neighbor's junk collection starts to encroach on your carefully manicured lawn. You see, the 24 blocks that once comprised the entirety of Canby had been deliberately and painstakingly laid out when Philander Lee and Company filed the first plat in 1870. But for many years after, those lines and streets were more hypothetical than anything else. The city council spent much of its first few years of business convincing residents to move chicken coops, fences, gardens, and trees so the platted streets could be graded and wooden curbs could be put in. The council had to repeatedly consider ordinances designed to pull reluctant property owners into compliance. I bet you never knew how close downtown Canby came to having chicken coops for bike racks instead of the stylish flowers that we have today. Other early ordinances addressed problems with peddlers, eating establishments, gambling, and other entertainment. They might have had an easier job with that if they had been able to keep a police chief on the payroll. Early Canby exchanged police chiefs about as often as most folks change their underwear. The $1 a month salary, which was paltry even in those days, probably didn't help. When repairing sidewalks and lighting the city's new street lamps became part of the job in 1895, the council reluctantly agreed to increase the pay to $4 a month. Now let's return to the subject of William Knight, Canby's second most well-known and influential founding patriarch to have an elementary school named after him. His story intertwines somewhat with that of Dr. William Kyle, founder of the German Lutheran communes that formed in Aurora, Oregon, and Bethel, Missouri, William Knight's hometown. Knight traveled west from Bethel in 1863 with his father, Joseph Sr., and four brothers, George, John, Adam, and Joseph Jr. The family had ties to the Aurora colony, but it was never very active in it. Instead, Joseph Sr. settled in Canby on land near the Molalla River. He died in 1872, but all his sons would remain in the area to make their mark on the blossoming town and help Canby grow, with the exception of John, who moved down to the Hubbard area. William was an early railroad agent and opened Knight Mercantile in 1871 across the street from the railroad depot. For those listeners who weren't alive in the 1870s, a mercantile is just a 5-cent word for a general store. In 1875, he built the area's first schoolhouse on Baker Prairie. From 1875 until his death in 1922, he served as clerk of the Baker Prairie and Canby school districts. He also served two terms as Clackamas County Sheriff and was postmaster from 1877 to 1884. He was one of the prime movers responsible for the push to incorporate Canby, and he did his part to make it successful, serving as the city's first recorder and a justice of the peace. He wasn't the only good knight in Canby either. His brother Adam Knight was our first blacksmith and, like most blacksmiths, was also an entrepreneur. He built the Knight Hotel. Should have called it the Good Knight Hotel. Anyone? Anyway, guys, we got to remember, I just read these jokes, but it's Tyler Frankie who writes them. Anyway, this Knight Hotel, it overlooked overlooked the 1877 Knight's Bridge over the Molalla River. Yep, shocker there, but Knight's Bridge and Knight's Bridge Road were named after one of the Knights, Adam Sr., who owned the land the original span was built on. The original was a charming covered bridge built by Clackamas County, but it was condemned in 1944 and would be blown into the Molalla River by a storm 3 years later. The loss of the bridge, compounded by the loss of ferry service during the same period, caused inconvenience and isolation for Canby. Knight's Bridge would be rebuilt by the county in 1964, slightly downriver from the original bridge. Adam Sr.'s son, Adam H. Knight, was twice mayor of Canby, a Clackamas County commissioner, and served as the city's postmaster for 23 years. But he wasn't the first postmaster. That honor belongs to his uncle, Charles Knight, better known as Doc, who also owned and operated a drugstore on Grant Street. This has been Canby Then. As always, thanks for listening and learning about our little area's history. We'll catch you next time. And that'll do it for me on this episode of the Canby Now podcast. I'm James Walton. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears, even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? Or no. That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Canby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yeah, heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Canby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Canby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.